I would rather have a day job than be a Pokemon master.
Han Solo is clearly more attractive than Indiana Jones.
I would take the Star Wars trilogy over the Matrix trilogy any time.
The Legend of Zelda versus Super Mario. Who's better in bed, Jafar or Gaston? And would Thanos masturbate with the Infinity Gauntlet or not? Every week, Nerd Rage the Great Debates brings you the funniest comics, writers, and podcasters to settle some of geekdom's most divisive topics. Find us on Spotify or wherever you find podcasts.
Welcome to the Escapist Comics Podcast. I'm Jacob Rubin.
I'm Jessica Valvoni.
And we have a very special guest today, the author of the upcoming comic Cult of Dracula. Everybody welcome Rich Davis to the show. Hi, Rich.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Hi, Rich. Nice to have you on.
Yeah, pleasure to be here. Thanks for giving me the invite.
Totally. We're big fans of Source Point Press. We're really excited to have you on. And we'd love to tell us a little bit about your comic.
So Cult of Dracula is a modern reimagining of Bram Stoker's original. It's set within a Charles Manson, Jim Jones inspired cult. I like to say it's witchy, it's weird, it's helter-skelter, and a hippie cult dedicated to an ancient blood goddess. If you can't tell, I've said that line a couple dozen times already.
but it's very good.
If you've read Stoker's Dracula, you're going to be very familiar with the characters and the settings, or at least the names of the settings. But I promise you, no matter how many times you've read it, you've got no idea where the story is going to end up.
Well, I have 5 copies of Dracula, I think, in my house.
Oh, right on.
So I love a good vampire story, first of all. We are big fans of vampires on this podcast.
Specifically the Buffy kind, but yeah.
Yeah, specifically the Buffy kind, but vampires in general.
George Gentry did a couple of covers for Cult of Dracula. So, he's very well known for his work on Buffy.
Oh, yeah. And,
George is an awesome dude, and I'm a huge fan of anything Joss Whedon, and Buffy was my introduction, really, to his universe, or Whedonverse, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nice. Well, glad that you're a fan of Buffy, and...
it's a requirement to be on the show.
Yeah, you have to. I'm sure you know Frank. Frank's been on the show a couple times.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. For No Heroin, Dead and Kids, Frank.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Yes, absolutely.
Any random Frank. Do you know any random Franks?
I know one. Random Frank. And so, hi, Frank.
he's listening. He's our biggest fan.
So, like you said, it's like a new take on Dracula, or like just the legend of Dracula. So where'd your fascination with like the Count begin?
You know, when I was a kid, I had a weird obsession with vampires from a time when I was way too young to actually be into vampires. Like, I was reading Anne Rice when I was, probably 11 or 12 years old. And you should not be reading Anne Rice when you're 11 or 12 years old. It really messes with your brain if you grow up to write weird vampire comics. So, kids, don't do that. Ever since I can really remember, I loved watching old horror movies, and the old Hammer films used to come on a lot. Where I'm from a little town in Tennessee called Sparta, tiny little town in the middle of nowhere. And, you know, back then my parents didn't even have cable. And, so we'd get like the over the air stuff, and they would play those Hammer films late night on the weekends. And I just became just drawn into the Christopher Lee performances. And of course, you know, you go back and you watch Bela Lugosi and it's fantastic. But really, as far back as I can remember, I've really, really been into the vampire mythologies. And Dracula seems to be the one vampire that can tie it all together, because so many people draw from Stoker's definitions of the things, the concepts and the themes that he put forward. So many other people like Anne Rice and others have really just drawn from that. So I think Dracula becomes kind of the patient zero for our modern vampire mythology. And that's one of the things I wanted to explore in Cult of Dracula as well.
Right. Yeah, I mean, and bringing a cult into it is such a, like a new idea. That's what I really liked about it being so different. And I really enjoyed it. And I, like you said, I have no idea where it's going. So I thought that was a really fresh take on it. And I really enjoyed the first issue.
Yeah, and you know, the cult aspect was also stems from kind of a childhood fear that I had. I watched the movie Helter Skelter. And I remember the actor who played Charles Manson. He had these really just terrifying eyes. And like, even right now, as I'm recounting that, I'm seeing those eyes in my head because it just scared the shit out of me. And, then I would later start, looking into Charles Manson and find out what really went on and just how he gripped an entire nation in fear. I mean, kids living all the way across the country were terrified that Charles Manson was going to break into their windows, steal them away, and murder their families. And, you know, that's a powerful presence. So, you know, that just kind of wanted to tie those two things together, you know, Manson and the, you know, these cult leaders who have this power over people. They'll make them do horrible things, make them commit murder, make them commit mass suicide. I mean, Jim Jones made parents, you know, inject poison into their children and watch them die. And so that's always been one of the most fascinating things about vampires to me, is that they have this ability to seduce and manipulate people and make normal good people do just horrible, horrible things, just like cult leaders. And so to me, it seemed like just a perfect marriage to bring those two things together and explore them in the book.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's really cool. Yeah, I never thought of it that way.
What other movies or comics did you draw from? I mean, I noticed you have like a good like noir, like detective vibe too. Are there any other ones that you were inspired by?
Absolutely. I'm a huge Quentin Tarantino fan. Again, I watched Tarantino films when I was way too young. My parents really didn't monitor what I read or watched.
Oh, yeah, me either. We have that Anne Rice thing in common. So,
and Joss Whedon's dialogue has influenced me a lot. Not to, suggest in any way that my dialogue gets onto his level, but it's definitely... I would definitely strive to do that, because I think both Tarantino and Whedon have just incredible quippy dialogue. And I really wanted that to come across in my book as well. I really wanted the characters to have real conversations and, you know, for readers to be able to hear the conversations in their head, and like each character have their own unique voice. So hopefully people are going to notice inspirations from things like Pulp Fiction, Reservoir Dogs, and when you get deeper into the book, there's going to be some things I drew from like Kill Bill and Joss Whedon's script on Alien 3, so things like that. I think you'll definitely see those influences in the book, at least I hope they come across.
You bring up a good point. Like, I don't want to spoil anything, but your the big speech from Renfield in the first issue, it almost has like a poetry to it, or like, you know, like a reverent speech, but then is like a lot of poetry to that as well, which I absolutely loved. And it's almost musical too. And like you said, Helter Skelter too, that like comes into it as well. That's why I asked that question too, because I do get a lot of that.
Right, and you know, Manson wanted to be a musician. And had he, been able to go on tour with the Beach Boys, we may not know who Charles Manson was to this very day. But, you know, he was a failed musician. And so in creating Renfield, who is very heavily influenced by Manson, I wanted that kind of musical quality to his voice. I'm glad you picked that up. And I spent no kidding. I spent hundreds of hours locked in my basement listening to interviews with Charles Manson to try to get that voice right. Because when people read Renfield, I want them to hear that cadence and that intonation and that just where, you know, Manson could be having a normal conversation and just bam, just like snap out of nowhere at you. And so I wanted that to come across with Renfield as well. And music was certainly a big influence there.
Yeah. Yeah, I still think
that scene.
Oh, sorry, go ahead, Jacob.
Yeah, I thought that scene was really cool. Like, because he wanders in and I'm like, okay, this is, at that point I clicked into like, okay, this is like a band set. Like, I didn't read the synopsis until after I read the cover.
Okay.
Yeah. So I was like, oh, this is kind of like the girl, Lucy. I was like, okay, so this is sort of like, cause I mean, I think that obviously it's something that's going to come up a lot is because it's so new is Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Yeah. I love that movie.
Yeah. I should tell you that when I saw that movie, I really knew almost nothing about Charles Manson or anything. I didn't really know that was like, yeah. So that whole thing with Brad Pitt, I didn't realize that that was like a deviation from real life.
Yeah.
And so I was like, all right, well, okay. And then I left the movie and looked it up and I was like, oh, that was like a huge moment. Like the, like when they killed Hitler in Glorious Bastards. Right. Now I get it. And now I see why people were so crazy about it. But
when that blowtorch came out, I was like, oh my God.
Yeah. That was, I mean, Tarantino will always deliver when it comes to action. That's the one thing where I'm like, there's no way. That was so, it was like funny. Like, I guess there's actually other funny scenes in movies where people get blowtorched. Blowtorches are kind of funny.
They can be. I mean, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, it depends on which end of the torch you're on. Yeah.
Right. Yes. That's true. I don't know. Hank Scorpio. That's hilarious. So I completely lost my train of thought. Right. When Renfield came in, I was like, okay, this guy's clearly a major player. I didn't realize that it was Renfield until I looked that up, which is, I think, a really cool take on Renfield, because I always think of him as being like this snivelly, trod upon, sad figure. But the way that you've characterized him is much more like with so much more agency and danger to always danger. But like, yeah, I think that's going to be a big difference. That's going to be something that even people who are very familiar with the existing Dracula mythos will see as an established difference. But the amount of danger, I felt like I was like, this scene could just be another character being introduced, or this could be a major, major moment. And I had no idea where that scene was going. And I could hear like bongo drums. Like, I read it more like a beat poet than like a song.
Yes. That's great. I love that. Yeah.
Yeah.
A very dear friend of mine named Carl Kennedy is, he actually is a beat poet, and he goes, he competes in slam poetry competitions. So, yes, I'm sure there's a lot of Carl's influence in that rhythm. And there's a music to beat poetry as well. And, you know, so that's that I definitely wanted that to come across with Renfield. And yeah, the feeling of danger at any time with him, that he could just, you know, just snap. And he wields all of this power. I mean, he has, you know, when you meet him, you know, he's in control of this entire cult. And, you know, just like Jim Jones or Warren Jeffs or David Koresh or Charles Manson, these people not only would die for him, but they would kill for him. And so anytime you speak to one of them or you see one of the interviews with them, you know, there's always, even if they're smiling, and maybe even when they're smiling, maybe it's even more pronounced, but there's always this looming sense of danger. And, you know, I wanted Renfield to be dangerous, especially when we first meet him. And just completely unpredictable. So, and you know, you've read, so you know the exchange he has with Arthur there and how it just comes out of nowhere. That he's been such a fun character to write, and probably one of the most difficult ones to explore, because his mind is just, it's fractured in so many ways. And we do explore how it got fractured and how he got there in later issues of the book.
Yeah. So Tom Waits will always be my Renfield.
Bram Stoker's Dracula, the Coppola film, is probably probably one of the most seminal films in my life. I adore that movie.
So good.
You know,
yeah.
I know some of the special effects don't hold up today, but I mean, he did so much of that work within the camera, you know, and just the ground, he pushed the envelope so far with what a vampire movie could be. And, you know, even Keanu Reeves's performance hasn't, you know, it's not as bad as I remember it being a long time ago, you know?
I still, that's the one thing that ruins it for me.
he's very stilted in that movie. And they, you know, they just didn't give him a whole lot to do. But the rest of the film, and, you know, Gary Oldman, Winona Ryder was fantastic. And, the supporting cast of Anthony Hopkins as Van Helsing, you just can't beat that.
Yeah, everyone else is great. I'll never understand Keanu Reeves being cast in a period piece.
Yeah, like, he was a pretty face, and he was the it boy at the time.
Right, yeah.
So
he went to a lot of periods at Bill and Ted, so he could play anything.
Fair enough. Yeah. He was probably the only actor at the time, other than Alex Winter, that had actually traveled to the Victorian period. So, I mean, you know.
Yeah.
I defer to you. Keanu Reeves is perfectly cast.
Right.
We'll never understand.
They cut out the scene where he meets Dracula. They were like, the movie's too long.
Right, yeah. Yeah, yeah, we got to cut something. And unfortunately, we can't beat Napoleon, so.
Right, yeah, we got to keep Genghis Khan in here. It was either Genghis Khan or Dracula. Yeah.
Right, so sorry, Dracula, you got to stay back. And Dracula could have come out there in the day in California anyway, so he wouldn't have been able to help him with the problem.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
Although the water park scene with Dracula would have been really, really great.
Wait, can he come out during the day? What's a night water park?
The night park, right.
The night water slide park.
Water park at night is like a nightmare. Oh my God.
It is. Like fluorescent lights. It's just a water park.
That would be so creepy.
Didn't they have that at, like, did you guys watch that Action Park documentary?
I haven't, no.
I haven't watched it. I think they had that where they would close it down at night, and then it would be like, now the nighttime is just for like adults, and like the kids would go home.
Oh, wow.
Wait, the documentary or the movie with Johnny Knoxville about
Back to the documentary.
Oh, okay, no.
Oh.
But well, I mean, that that place is a death trap. Like, I've read so much about Class Action Park, right? Is that what they call it?
Yeah, Class Action Park, yeah. Great. I like how, I know podcast listeners, you can't hear, but I've turned this light on our Zoom, and it's literally just made it darker in my room.
Gotta add that eerie ambiance.
They heard the switch go on.
Yes. Yeah. I had to look like a vampire. Which actually, for telling some home stories here, when Interview with a Vampire came out, because I was obsessed with those books as well. My dad was going to take me to go see it because we saw very awkward movies together when I was a kid. And I dressed up for it and like painted my face like in as white as I could to be goth when I think it was 11 when that movie came out, maybe.
Nice.
And he was like, absolutely not. Go wash. Go wash all of that out. I was cosplaying before there was cosplaying.
Before cosplay was a thing. Yeah, you were a trendsetter.
How old is Kirsten Dunst in that movie? Is that Kirsten Dunst?
Yes.
She was young. She was
really young.
I mean, was she maybe 12 or 13 when she did that?
Yeah, maybe. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, she seemed so much younger.
Yeah.
Like in my head, she's like 8, but that can't be right.
No, well, Claudia is supposed to be, what, 5, I believe, in the book, right?
Yeah, she's maybe 5 or 6.
Yeah, so they really, she did a good job, playing her age down. Of course, she was young and innocent at the time anyway. But I thought she actually did a really nice job as Claudia.
She did.
Oh, she was great. Yeah.
Yeah, she was amazing. That is a good vampire movie. Solid.
Yes.
Brings me to my next question. What is your favorite vampire movie?
Actually, it is Interview with the Vampire.
Oh,
so we were just talking about that. And Bram Stoker's Dracula would be very close second, and then Brides of Dracula.
Good choice, is a
great one. There's a lot of really good Hammer films, but Brides really stands out to me, I think.
Oh yeah, that's a great one. Jacob, what's your favorite vampire movie?
Man, I'm trying to think of like, because I haven't seen, unfortunately, now I really want to watch, I've never seen Bram Stoker's Dracula. I haven't seen Interview with a Vampire as an adult, so I really should rewatch it. Man, I'm trying to think of like, I don't know. Leslie Nielsen, Dracula Dead and Loving It. That's my top one.
Of course, yeah. Yep. That's a good one.
No, there's got, this is so weird that I can't really think of any vampire movies I've seen.
Have you seen Near Dark?
That's my favorite one.
You're gonna love issue 3 then, because there is a very solid Near Dark reference in there.
Oh, sweet.
Yeah.
Gotta love Bill
Paxton. Oh, yes.
Yeah.
That movie is fantastic.
It's so good. Yeah.
Love it.
Interview is also right up there. It's so hard to choose.
Right. Yeah. Interview still stands out to me because when Lestat is first turning Louis, and they're in the cemetery in New Orleans, and the statues start to come, you know, like you see their faces change and everything mm-hmm. becomes brighter when he sees with his vampire eyes. That still is just burning my brain as such a gorgeous scene.
It really is.
And I love the pacing of the film. It's just wonderful. And the relationships between the characters, and, you know, even Tom Cruise was not, he was kind of held in check and wasn't totally Tom Cruise in the movie, you know?
Oh, yeah. So exactly.
I adore Interview with a Vampire.
Yeah, it's great. Worst vampire movie?
Oh gosh, I just forgot what it was called. Vampireland. And if anybody out there knows the guy who made this movie, I want to meet him one day because I want to thank him for making this awful movie. Have either of you seen Vampireland?
No, I've seen Stakeland. No.
Right, now Stakeland is wonderful. Vampireland is awful. So the costuming straight up came from Spirit Halloween.
Oh, nice.
White face paint. You probably, when you went to see Interview the Vampire, you probably could have like auditioned for Vampireland.
Awesome.
And so these vampires, they show up and they in this little small Michigan town, and they're like harassing this girl for no reason, but they're just stalking her all over town, and we never find out really why. And then all of a sudden the moon blows up and nothing happens. The earth doesn't tilt off its axis, the oceans don't go crazy, but the moon explodes. Mm-hmm. And then she runs more from the vampires, and then all of a sudden she's escaping the town, and right as she's crossing the bridge to get out of town, she gets attacked and gang raped by the Four Horsemen
of
the
Apocalypse. Shit. Yeah.
And the movie is just god-awful terrible, but I want to meet this guy and thank him because I realized this was an awful movie. But he got it made. And not only did he get it made, he sold it. And not only did he sell it, but he convinced people like me to pay $9.99 to download it and watch it.
Oh, dude. I'm like, paid for it.
I actually paid for it. And so I'm thinking to myself, as I'm writing Cult of Dracula, and I've been working on this for a while, but as I'm writing it, every time I wanted to give up, all I kept telling myself was, just be as good as Vampireland. And if you can be as good as Vampireland, you're gold. Yeah. I want to thank this dude. I really want to meet him and thank him because I probably wouldn't be sitting here today if I hadn't watched that terrible film.
We got to find this guy.
Let's get him on the show.
Right? If you do, please call me.
I will. We'll get on it.
Because I want
to
thank
him. Actually, he's trying to enter the Zoom room right now. We're not ready. I'll wait.
I have to go Queen of the Damned. I'm going to stay with Anne Rice. That movie is terrible.
Right. But Marius was perfectly cast, right?
That's true. Yeah. Poor Leah. R.I.P. Yeah.
But,
it could have been so good. That's why it makes me so mad.
The book is amazing.
Yeah.
And I don't know how they butchered this film as badly as, I mean, I left the theater angry.
Oh, yeah, me too.
After watching that. I mean, I was pissed.
Yeah.
And, good choice.
Yeah, yeah. Jacob, did you think of your best vampire film yet?
Yes, I did. I of course, I can't believe this wasn't like the first thing that popped in my head. What We Do in the Shadows.
Oh, yes. Fantastic movie.
That's great.
Yeah.
It's great.
So good.
We're werewolves, not swearwolves. That's like, yeah, I haven't watched the show yet. But
it's hysterically funny, but it's also really clever. You know the way they deal with like psychic vampires and things, which you know that's been that's something I don't think that gets explored enough in fiction. You know, it's kind of a popular modern concept that you know vampires don't exsanguinate their victims; they drain them. You know, emotionally. Mm-hmm. And and that we play with that a little bit in Cult of Dracula too, kind of the psychic weight that a vampire can put on their victims.
Yeah, I can see that definitely with the cult aspect. Mm-hmm. Definitely. Just thinking about cults makes me drained. So
yeah.
Also because I watch too many crime shows all the time.
Right.
Especially before I go to bed.
Oh, God.
That's dangerous. Oh, wow.
It is dangerous. I know. I like, why do I watch Law and Order, Special Victims Unit, or like a crime show as I go to sleep? It's not healthy.
What kind of dreams do you have?
Really bad ones a lot of times.
I totally see that.
I also write, so it helps me think of things or new ideas.
Well, there you go. Yeah. Okay. I can dig that. It's not, you're not torturing yourself. You're researching.
Exactly. Yeah.
Fair enough.
However, this isn't a movie character, but one of my favorite vampires in fiction, full stop, is Cassidy in Preacher.
Yes.
And I got a bit of a Preacher vibe from this comic.
You know, yes. Henry Martinez is my artist. And very early on when we were talking, it actually was a conversation about, well, you know, because there's a church in the kind of opening establishing scene. And so Henry messages me. He says, okay, so what does a church look like to you? And I was like, that's an odd question, you know, because coming from the South, you know, where I'm from, churches all look kind of similar, you know, especially these weird, you know, country churches way, way back in the sticks. And so it never occurred to me, you know, Henry, being from New York and, you know, lived in larger cities his entire life. You know, churches look totally different for him. You know, they're cathedrals and, you know, big brick buildings. And so we both just started talking and we decided that the church in Preacher is probably the best representation of what this church should look like. And then Henry's art style, I think, is very Preacher-esque as he draws. It's definitely got that vibe from that period. And which is what we wanted, because we wanted the book to have a little bit of an older, almost grindhouse feel with the art, you know. And you know, one of the hallmarks of grindhouse movies is they're not real polished; it's slick. And so Henry roughed his art up really well. It's beautiful art, but it's rough around the edges, which is exactly what we were going for. Which again screams Preacher to me.
Yeah, very Steve Dillon. Yeah.
Yeah, Steve Dillon. I could definitely see that as well.
Yeah.
Cool. So if we want to get into some, if you mind getting into some pop culture news with us real quick. Speaking of Vertigo, and RIP Vertigo, by the way, too, since it
doesn't
exist, and that's very sad. But this comes
I don't really know why that happened.
Well, because DC doesn't want to make money. I don't know why. Basically,
I think they thought Black Label was going to take Vertigo's place.
Yeah, they did. You know? Yeah,
I think they were like, okay, we could just simplify things. We'll ditch this Vertigo thing that people don't even realize is DC, and we'll just call it DC Black Label and do the same thing. And then I don't know, it just didn't work.
No.
Yeah,
I miss Vertigo.
They're still doing it, I think, because they didn't. They also wanted to make like adults, I say in air quotes, superhero books as well, and put that under the Black Label so they could do all of that at the same time, which they're still doing, I guess. Like, they're with like Wonder Woman.
It's clear they're not pushing it like they thought they were going to. You know, they thought it was going to be the next big thing. And it's interesting. I liked it better when there were fewer Black Label books, you know, because, you know, Batman Damned, it was a great read. Now the other history of the DC Universe, that's a great read. But some of the other stuff is just, I don't know, I think they're overdoing it a bit.
But you don't want to read 10 Batman books a month, you mean?
Yeah, I kind of have to draw my line at 9. I just can't deal with it.
Well, anyways, there is good news. At least Sandman is a show, or it's going to be a show, and that is very big news.
I am super stoked.
I think we all are, in every comic book store and comic book writer and all around the world. That rejoiced, was it yesterday?
I think it was yesterday.
And Neil Gaiman's actually attached to the show. He's writing the show. The fact that Gwendolyn Christie was cast as Lucifer.
That's really cool.
That was who I was most excited about.
Yeah, she's going to be fantastic in that role.
Oh, yeah, for sure. It reminded me a little bit of Constantine and Tilda Swinton.
Lucifer
in that, totally.
Sure.
Yeah, definitely the same aesthetic. And, you know, I wouldn't have complained if they would have cast Tilda Swinton in that role. But, but I am not going to complain about Gwendolyn Christie at all, because she is brilliant. And I love her.
Oh, yeah. Me too.
Yeah.
Do any of you know the guy who's playing Dream?
No, I've seen pictures. I think he's new. He did something. Was it for Stars? Maybe.
I'm trying to look it up right now.
Mighty IMDb, save me.
Yeah, I know, right?
Tom Sturridge.
Yeah.
All right. Well, he's been in stuff, but he was in Pirate Radio in 2009. I guess he's been around for a while.
Oh, that was the Philip Seymour Hoffman movie, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
He was like, I can't be that old. How old is this guy? 85. Oh, yeah.
Okay.
No, he's been around.
He was born in 85.
Yeah, he was born in 85. He's been around.
He just said he was 85 years old.
Oh, he's actually 85 years old. He's
he looks great.
He is the actual King of Dreams.
Yeah. He just put him in Cold Storage for a while, right?
Right.
Perfect for science fiction. I seriously don't recognize him at all. At first I thought he was the guy from Vampire Diaries, which I
he kind of looks that way.
Damon, did you watch Vampire Diaries too? Are you that in?
I've watched some episodes of Vampire Diaries. You know, if it's got a vampire in it, I'm gonna watch it, you know. I don't think I was their target demo, but I did enjoy it. You know, Ian Somerhalder, he played the role very well.
He did. He has my heart forever.
And Anya Dobrev, I liked her too.
All right, Jacob, what do you got?
The casting for, I think the other characters, like, I love that we got Chucky D coming back, Charles Dance.
Yep. I'll watch him in anything. I love
Charles. You're like Chucky D. I was like, who are you talking about?
Yeah, from Run DMC.
Yeah, Big Chuck. Wait, the Chuck D. That's the Flavor Flav.
Okay.
Oh, no, you're right. Chuck D was, he wasn't in Public Enemy. He was in NWA. He was in, I don't remember. Now I don't remember.
I really should know.
I thought
he blanked. I know he was an 80s rapper, so.
Well, we're all now too white to answer this question.
Yes,
he was in Public Enemy. It was him and Flava Flav.
Right. Good job.
And he's playing the guy who like traps Dream at the beginning of the series.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think is like, oh, of course. That's such a like. I mean, I can totally see Tywin Lannister doing something like that.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So I think, and he won't be around very long unless they're like kind of going the preacher route where they'll like make him like sort of a recurring antagonist for the first season and then get rid of him or something.
I did hear there are, so they were filming and Neil Gaiman tweeted out that they were filming 24 Hour Diner, which is the which is issue number 6.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
One of the like most fucked up issues too. So I don't know if they actually are going issue by issue. Maybe.
You know, I don't see how you could, you know, because they'll have to break it up. I mean, I would imagine, you know, but there, you couldn't go sequentially issue by issue and tell a coherent story. I don't think not in the TV format. Be interesting to try though.
It would be. I mean, yeah, Preludes and Nocturnes, I don't think would work that way. I think Dollhouse would work that way.
Dollhouse would, yeah.
Yeah,
it's
that, like, serial killer story, and yeah,
yep.
Which yep. is my favorite one. So I hope they.
I love Dollhouse. Yeah.
Yeah, same here. Yeah.
I actually, when I recommend people pick up Sandman, you'll probably throw something at me here, but I oftentimes recommend that they skip Preludes and Nocturnes and just go straight into Dollhouse. And
I actually would not throw anything at you. I recommend that a lot too.
Because. Preludes and Nocturnes was kind of weird trying to tie in the Justice League, and I'm like, what? Yeah, this doesn't fit. So I'm glad they abandoned that really quickly and made it what it became. Because Sandman is just, it's one of those absolute must-read comic book series for anyone who wants to really explore what comics are capable of. I mean, it just... It stretches the genre and the medium like nothing else ever does. I mean, it's incredible.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And the fact that he was exploring things in 89 that no one else would touch, mm-hmm. too, whether it be in politics or, I mean, like I said, in 24 Hour Diner, I mean, he does, you know, people who are trans, gay, or just LGBT stuff in general. And women who are abused, you know, stuff like that. And nobody else was writing stuff like that, really.
No, I mean, you couldn't. I mean, they wouldn't allow that type of stuff to be written, you know, because they were afraid that audiences wouldn't, you know, wouldn't read it. And, you know, Gaiman, he took some big risks with by doing that and was well rewarded. And we as comic book readers were extremely well rewarded for it.
Yeah. And I think now... obviously, like, anybody can open up and write stuff like that now too, so
yep.
which is great.
Yep, he blazed the trail.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Hey Jacob, you had some X-Men stuff you wanted to talk about, right?
Oh yes. I think this is a very interesting thing that Marvel is putting an aspect of the X-Men book up for vote. You can vote for the character. They give you a list of 10 characters and you decide which one you think should join the team. They don't tell you who else is on the team, but they say that of these 10, only one of them will join. And then there's a whole lot of copy in this thing about how, like, you could change the course of the history of the X-Men, and, like, sure. But
didn't Hickman just
X-Men
do that?
Fan vote,
right? He literally just did that. Like,
yeah. I don't think my vote is going to change it, but I guess it just did recently. So if I could now change the course of the X-Men. All right.
I hope they don't undo what Hickman did with House and Powers of X. That is another brilliant piece of X-Men writing. And, it just magically fixed all of the continuity problems that have arisen from having 60 years of X-Men books and reboots and new stories and new teams. It's like, because no matter what happened, all you have to do to the equation is drop the Moira factor into it, and all of a sudden the equation's balanced. It works. Just put Moira in there, and whoop, there it is. And so that was a stroke of pure genius, and I do hope they don't muck around with that too much, because it just solves so many continuity problems.
I know, I completely agree. And then also the whole, oh, if an X-Men dies, we can just reborn them.
Throw a new one.
Creepy.
They weren't doing that before, but now they're just like, we don't need to explain it. We just have a system.
Now you have an explanation, and so they don't have to waste ink writing an explanation. They just say, you know, we're out here. We had a seed. You know, here we go.
Although it's crazy they did that, because now I remember that a few years ago the Death of Wolverine story arc was like a huge deal, and we sold a whole bunch of copies of that, and people were like, oh my god, they killed Wolverine, what are they gonna do? And we know that he's gonna come back, but like it's important to see, like, okay, how is Marvel gonna decide that Wolverine is dead and dead permanently, and what does that mean? And now we know that they can never do stories like that. They're just like, we're not like, no X-Men character will ever have a death of again.
We literally had a contest.
And I remember reading Death of Wolverine, and I was like, okay, I have seen on a comic panel drawn by Umberto Ramos, I have seen Wolverine literally vaporized, and somehow his healing factor brought him back. So you're going to tell me that just encasing him in adamantium is going to kill him?
No, I
just can't buy that. I've seen him vaporized, you know? So, but yeah, you're absolutely right. They'll never be able to do a death of that anyone will buy now, because, I mean, people are going to buy it, but no one will believe it, because, you know, now they know there's going to be a seed.
Unless they destroy Krakoa.
Yeah, that could happen. Yeah. But it would just like
that's probably how they get out of this.
And there would be a little fragment of it somewhere that would grow again, you know.
That's what it's gonna be. That's gonna be their next big event. Death of Krakoa. That's what it is.
Now somebody from Marvel like a little to this just threw their phone because you spoiled their entire big event for 2022.
Damn it. Yes, I did it. All right, Jacob, real quick, what's our choices for the contest?
Your choices are Armor, created by Joss Whedon, the one with the armor.
Yeah.
Banshee, everyone knows Banshee. Boom Boom, former friend of the Beyonder for some reason. Cannonball, who I think they established as immortal, though I'm not sure why. Mm-hmm. Forge, very complicated backstory. Marrow. Polaris, powers ? Strong guy. Powers. Huh?
She's got magnetic powers, like Magneto.
Sometimes.
And I think she's also telekinetic, like everyone else.
Magnetic powers, then she was super strong, then she got her magnetic powers back, then it was something else, I don't remember, and now it's magnetic again.
Okay, sure.
Sunspot, as seen in the New Mutants film, sort of.
Yeah.
And Tempo, who is the only character on this list that I know nothing about.
Oh, yeah, I looked that one up.
I guess she's a drummer, maybe?
She has the powers of drums.
Yeah.
She has the powers of J.K. Simmons in the movie Whiplash.
There you go. Perfect. All right.
I was going to vote for question is, so if we want to put Tempo in there, we can put them together.
Oh, I just looked up Tempo, and that did not work. Just said Tempo Workout Fitness. That's what my phone came up with.
Okay.
So I'll get on that soon.
She makes workout tapes.
She makes
T90X.
All right, Tempo. Tempo is a fictional African-American mutant character appearing in American comic books published by Marvel Comics. She was first introduced as a member of the Mutant Liberation Front in New Mutants 86. Her abilities are light and time manipulation. There's my dog. I win the dog competition.
You're voting for Tempo.
Sorry. Ooh, her creators are Rob. I can't. Hey! Okay. Her creators are Rob Liefeld and Louise Simonson.
Oh, okay.
I'm voting for Tempo.
Yeah, I think that's 87. Was that the same issue as Cable? No.
87 was Cable. This was 86.
Yeah. Oh, you said 86.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yep. So.
Yeah, she could have been in the Deadpool movie.
Yeah.
She still could be.
She could be in number three, yeah. Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. So, Jess, you voted for Tempo?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Nice. Gonna stick with that.
Because of time manipulation?
Yeah, time manipulation is pretty. Flight and time manipulation.
Yeah, that actually is pretty cool. You know,
to
be able to manipulate time and light, that's actually pretty rad. And a unique power. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I will say I'm not fond of her armor, though. She needs a
Yeah, that was a big.
It looks like she's wearing a stegosaurus on her head.
I mean, don't you want to wear a stegosaurus on your head? I mean,
no, looks like it get in the way of things.
I kind of want
to
wear a stegosaurus.
I was going to say, it looks like she's trying to wear the Captain Marvel armor, but has only seen black and white pictures and had to guess.
Right. It's a cosplay.
It is.
Yeah.
There you go. She's a cosplayer who just randomly found out she's actually a mutant.
And now she can manipulate time, go back, redo
right.
it.
Right.
Pick something else.
Fix her costume. And yes. So like every amazing cosplayer, she's going to just constantly be going back and constantly fixing her costume because it's never good enough for her.
Right. Perfect.
Man, I think we just wrote an X-Men book.
I think we did. Copyright this shit now.
They could retroactively have that. They could say that for the Wasp, and that's why her costume is different every panel in the 60s.
Oh. That was
brilliant.
That's a lot. I really love
that. So
he owes us a thank you.
I voted for Strong Guy because I like him.
Strong Guy. Yeah. All right. I won't harp on it. All right. What are you going for, Rich?
I'm going to go with Banshee simply because it just doesn't fit any of the other character molds that are in the main X-Men team. So, I'm going to go with Banshee and the awesome, awesome power of the voice.
Is it also because he was a zombie recently?
Maybe.
Maybe. He brought him back from the dead recently.
Yeah. Yep. I mean, but everybody's come back from the dead in the X-Men universe. Yeah.
And a bunch of them have been vampires.
Yes, that's
true.
Yeah. Yeah, my birthday issue of was Storm when she was a vampire. Yeah. Jubilee.
That was badass.
Jubilee.
Yeah. It was badass.
And actually, I think that's it.
Oh, yeah. No, there has to be more.
And Wolverine was Lord of the Vampires in a What If universe. So.
That's right.
Oh, yeah. Cool.
That was a good one.
Would the curse of vampirism work on him because of his healing factor? Whatever, it's coming.
Yeah, I don't remember how, but they dealt with that in the book, in the comic. So that is actually a valid question to ask, but it was covered in the comic book.
Real quick, too, and we're going to have to wrap up pretty soon, but are you going to see the Morbius movie?
Oh, yeah, I'll see it. I mean, it's a comic book movie, so I'm totally going to see it. I think it... It's got potential, I like anything Spider-Man. I'm a kind of a sucker for that. I don't do a lot of superhero comics anymore. I like more of the genre stuff, but I still have a soft spot for Peter Parker, and I love Miles Morales. And so anything that's got to do with Spider-Man, I'm probably going to love it.
Yeah. It's just Sony. I have a bad feeling about it.
Yeah.
Also, Morbius and a living vampire. I was never on board.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I will definitely go see that new Blade movie, though.
Hell yes.
That
awesome. Oh my God, yes.
I know.
How did I think about Blade?
Right?
My top vampire movies.
That's a solid. It's a solid vampire movie.
That's when I met Chris Christopherson. I just watched Blade, and I was like, "Hey, Blade was really good." He was like, "Thanks." That's the entirety of our conversation.
Wow!
I was sitting behind him at a pro wrestling show that his son was in. That's.
Yeah, but at least you got a thanks. I mean, you know.
Yeah.
We just blown you off.
You could have, yeah. I didn't know you met Chris Christopherson.
Yeah, I posted the photo. His son's a pro wrestler. He goes by Jody Warpig, and I went to an APW show in Daly City. And happened to sit behind him. And during the break, all these people were coming and taking his picture. And I was like, who is that? Oh, shit. Chris Christopherson. So he doesn't look at all like he did Blade. His shirt was on, which he didn't wear a shirt for the whole of Blade, if I recall.
Right.
Probably. Yeah, that's right. Was he in Blade 2?
He was cut in that movie.
No, he died in Blade 1. Wasn't called Blade 1. It was just called Blade. He died, right? <in
Blade 1. laughs> No, he was
the balls.
Oh, he died, but then he came back for 3.
That's right. That's what it was.
Yeah.
Okay. Cool.
I think it was 3 he came back for. Yeah.
Okay.
And it's been a while since I've seen those.
Yeah, I know, me too. They're always on something, and I'm just like, well, there's probably something better.
Yeah, and you know, I think that's part of the problem why I can't remember which one's which, because they are always on, so I catch them now in pieces. Right. So it's hard to remember which movie I'm watching.
Yeah, exactly.
It's just the Blade universe.
The one with Ryan Reynolds is 3. That's what I know that.
Yes. Yeah, right. And Triple H and his vampire Pomeranian.
Right. Best one.
Yes. How can you not love a vampire Pomeranian?
I know.
Triple H has metal fangs in that for like no reason, right? Just because it looks dope.
Just because, I mean, because it's metal fangs. I mean,
yeah.
Make him more badass. Yeah.
If I were a badass vampire with a Pomeranian, I would want metal fangs.
You know they'll actually put metal, like caps on your dog's teeth now.
Really?
Yeah, you can get gold ones, or you can put a diamond on your dog's tooth, or yeah, so they would look like metal fangs. Random fact.
That is pretty awesome.
Yeah, I used to work in dog dentistry. It's like $3,000 though.
I don't think I'm going to be doing that for my dogs anytime soon. I'll get some like aluminum foil and put it on there.
Oh my God, that would hurt so bad.
It wouldn't do that. It's all right. Really.
Silver spray paint like in Fury Road. Then you're good.
There you go. That would be really bad.
You can use probably worse.
Spray. Yeah, probably worse.
Yeah, definitely worse.
All right. We have one last question to ask. We ask all of our guests this as long as we remember.
Oh, could we still do this?
Like I said, as long as we remember.
Right.
All right. Aquaman, beard or no beard?
I like bearded badass Aquaman.
Yeah, me too. I don't think, especially now that we have a real Aquaman. We started this way before Aquaman ever had a movie.
Yeah.
And he looks much better with a beard.
That's just what he looks like now. I don't ever want to see clean-shaven Jason Momoa. I don't think my brain would be able to process it.
No, that would be weird.
It would be weird.
I mean, that would be really weird.
It would be. Thor, beard or no beard?
No beard for Thor.
Yeah. Oh. That's because I definitely go Chris Hemsworth. No beard now.
Yeah.
After Ragnarok, especially.
Yeah.
I was just watching a really bad horror movie with his brother. I just call him No Hemsworth. Because he's the one, yeah. It was really, I can't even remember the name of it. And I was literally watching it 2 hours ago.
You know, when I pulled up the Wikipedia page for the Sandman show, he was considered to be Morpheus. He was like, he made it to the 3 finals.
What? Really? Not the brother.
Yeah. Yeah, no, Liam Hemsworth.
Not Liam. Oh. No. It goes Chris Hemsworth, Liam Hemsworth, and then no Hemsworth.
Right. And wait, is he the one, was he on Westworld?
Yes.
He's Hemsworth. Okay, yeah.
Luke Hemsworth.
Luke Hemsworth, thank you.
Yeah. The one who doesn't look like it, you know, the other two hit the genetic lottery and
then he I know, it's really sad. He's mostly a stunt guy, but now he's getting more roles somehow.
Right. Yeah.
He's also not a good actor.
You'll have to excuse me. I misread the Wikipedia entry. Liam Hemsworth was not considered to be Morpheus. He was considered to be the Corinthian.
Oh.
Okay.
That makes more sense.
No, I could see that. I could see him more as the Corinthian. Yeah.
Yeah.
He kind of looks weird, like a, you know, a sadistic murderer type person. So yeah.
But still, like, kind of like a little suave. Like, you could totally get why this guy would convince people to let him eat their eyeballs.
Exactly. Yeah. I could see him as a demon on the loose from hell. Yeah. So okay. Yeah. I could do that.
And the movie I was watching earlier was called Death of Me. Don't watch that movie.
I have not seen that movie.
It's it just came out.
Double feature, Death of Me and Vampire Land.
Yeah. Oh, why do I waste my time on these bad horror movies?
I ask myself that about 5 times a week. Yeah. And then I'm like, because I love them.
Yeah, it's really hard. All right. Yeah. Well, thanks so much for being on the show today, Rich. It's been really fun.
You forgot the final question.
What's the final beer question? What?
The beard question. We did Aquaman. We did Thor.
Are we going to do Spider-Man?
Yeah, Spider-Man, beard or no beard?
Oh, God, no beard. No beard. No, I can't see Peter with it. No.
I think they only have
get caught under the mask.
That has said beard for Spider-Man because I liked depressed, sad Spider-Man.
Yeah. Like Peter B. Parker in Spider-Verse. He had like kind of a stubble thing going on.
No, yeah, I can handle, but like I'm thinking like full-on beard. No, that's weird.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He's only had that when he gets dumped by Mary Jane and then he's really depressed and maybe.
Right.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
So it's bearded Peter is like fat Thor. He's depressed and sad.
Yeah.
And,
yeah. Okay.
I can go with for maybe like two panels, but before he goes out and, you know, fights crime, he's got to shave.
Yeah.
Agreed. But who would know?
It would be all like.
It's not like, wow, Superman's really letting himself go. It's like, we can't tell.
It would be like Fluffy under the mask.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, you know, big mutton chop type. Exactly.
Also, could you see Tom with a beard?
No.
No.
Yeah.
I don't think he could grow a beard,
but. He's got that baby face, and he's like. You know, I kind of picture Tom Holland with like, you know, like little 13-year-old pencil thin mustache that he's, you know, trying to make come in, you know.
Yeah.
Pubert Adams.
could there have been a more brilliant choice for Peter Parker than Tom Holland?
Oh my God.
No. He's amazing.
He's just perfect.
He's great.
Yeah. So good. All right.
He even did a Queens accent in the first one.
Oh my God, Jacob, again with the Queen's accent. You love it.
I will never let it go.
You'll never let it go.
Stop doing it.
All right. I'm going to close this out again. We really thank you for being here. It's been a lot of fun, Rich.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
This has been the Escapist Comics Podcast. I'm Jessica Bellavoni.
And I'm Jacob Rubin. Thanks again, Rich Davis, for coming on. Cult of Dracula is the name of the comic by, what's the company?
Source Point Press. It hits store shelves on March 31st, so it is available in Diamond's Preview right now. We have covers from Gula Nemeth and Shannon Mayer available. So, yeah, Shannon's is right behind me. So, yeah, please go ask your local comic book shop to order it and hit us up on Facebook, Cult of Dracula, or on Instagram at Cult Comic and Twitter at Cult Comic.
Awesome. Those are the plugs. Anything else you'd like to plug while you're here?
I'm probably missing something, but I think I'm good because I can't remember anything else.
Right. It's great.
Your socials that you want to.
Yeah. You know, if you hit up the Cult of Dracula, the Facebook page, it's probably going to be me responding. And so, yeah, follow me there. I don't have one of those really cool author pages with the blue check yet, but yeah, I'm working on it. So,
All right. Thanks so much. We'll talk to you guys next week.
Bye. Thanks for listening to the Escapist Comics Podcast. We'll see you next time.